23rd of May, 2005, Peter Carter.
Those are to go back before the war. My elder brother John, and a friend of his called Eric Tipper,
yeah,
went for a tour of Germany on their bikes,
yeah,
before the war. And as soon as they came back, this was about 1938, I suppose, they both joined immediately the TA, mm, because they obviously saw what was going on. They were in the YHA, the Youth Hostel Association, and they did Germany. So, the beginning of the war, my brother was already in the 7th Battalion, and they were billeted, when they were called up, at Pike Mills, to start with. They then went out to Norton Barracks, and then they were part of the BEF. My uncle, Colonel Parks, was the colonel of the regiment that took the Worcesters to France, and they came back through Dunkirk. Everybody knows the horrendous time they had. My family were all, one way or another, involved in it. My mother was in the WVS. My sister was the commandant of the Red Cross cadets, and my father was captain, quartermaster in the Home Guard. I was still at school, but because I was big, that they wanted volunteers. I was an air raid warden for the sector called J6, I think it was, and that was based in the St. Larches Road Club House. And the head warden of our sector was a bloke called Blenko. He also lived in Larches Road, and we used to, there were two blokes that were permanent wardens, but the rest of us were volunteers, and we turned out when the air raid sirens went. And my most scary bit, because normally I went with one of the older blokes, but there was a panic on, because they thought somebody or something had dropped in the chestnut wood of the sugar beet. And our area covered Larches Road, Blount Terrace, Southport Road, Northumberland Avenue, Lyle Avenue, Southport Road, up to the sugar beet. And I was sent in the middle of the night to have a look through this blasted chestnut wood as a 16-year-old kid.
That's the wood that used to front onto the Stepwell Road, isn't it?
Yes, right next yes, door to the to the sugar beet, but it went right down to the canal. It was a huge area in those days.
Yeah.
Swethick Drop Forge was the other, but there was nothing else there, the chestnut wood. But at school as well, as sports afternoon was Wednesday afternoon, what we had the choice of playing sports or going out and helping farmers. Mm. And I and my mates, we all went to help on the farm, like thinning beet and all the rest of it. The farmer's name, I always remember, was Groves on Harperbury Common somewhere. The first time I ever had a drink, and I had a drink of, he used to keep two little horns in his barn, and they're little cups, horn cups, and when he finished, he always gave us a horn of cider each. So, and then during the school holidays, we went actually working on farms. My pal, John Buchanan, he lived in Stanklin Lane. We both went working for a farm at Hartlebury. We did everything like fruit picking, pea picking, bean picking. And I remember the one day we were picking peas, and we got paid sixpence a pot. Now, a pot of peas was 40 pounds of peas. And he took them to market this one time, and for some reason he couldn't sell them, so he brought them back. And I remember he sold me a pot for sixpence. So what I actually did, I just picked a pot of peas and took it home. But if you can imagine what the hell my mother did with 40 pounds of peas. Anyway,
I guess the neighbours had a lot.
Yeah,
was this
1940?
No,
the war had started, because we didn't do that at school before the war.
Okay, which school did you go to?
Hartlebury Grammar School, Queen Elizabeth, yes.
Yes, okay.
And at school too, we that was when school dinners started. And they changed their woodwork shop and metalwork shop into a school dining room. And we actually had cooked dinners at school.
Yeah.
We also had allotments on the headmaster's garden. He had a huge garden. The house is still there on the bank. And so we each had a plot about 12 by 12 to grow lettuce and all the rest of it. So we were helping the war effort, or digging for victory. Yeah. The other thing I remember during the war, we had quite a few evacuees or refugees or whatever you like to call them. The most highest profile was a Czech called Fischer, Hans Fischer. And he came from Prague, and the Czech government sent him and his family out of the country. He was the editor of the Prague Times, and he was anti-Nazi. So he came, and they were billeted or whatever, you know, with us. And he, while he was with us, he was working at the sugar beet. And we had another bloke who came and stayed with us one time. His name was Sam Ways, and he came from Shanghai or Hong Kong or somewhere like that, where he'd been making sugar over in the Far East. But he came back to England and was allocated to Kidderminster. I think we only had them while the people got themselves sorted, you know, because another bloke we had, an architect from Malvern called Burroughs, and he was the architect that designed all the outside work for the Rover Company at Draco, the underground company.
Yes.
So okay. All the outside buildings, he did. Burroughs, Burroughs.
Okay,
something
Burroughs,
like that. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
We had Marion Tillerson from Smethwick, Holyoaks Girls High School or something. She came and was billeted with us for a time. And then I came home from school one day, and I told my mother that the headmaster had been asking if that there was a lad coming from Birmingham to the school, and they were looking for someone for him to stay. And like a prat, I mentioned it to my mother. So we had John Storr. He came and stayed with us for... I can't remember how long they were, he was with us for a time.
What did he do?
He was at school. He's a schoolboy.
Oh, he's a schoolboy. Okay.
Yes, he's now something in the banking in Canada somewhere. He came over a couple of years back to see everybody.
And, yeah. So he went to Hartlebury School?
Oh yes, he went to the school as well, yes. But I felt a right prat quite like going home just mentioning it to my mother, you know, in passing. Yeah. 2 days later, the headmaster calls me into his study and tells me to take John Storr home. My mother agreed to have him. I was about 2 years older than him, so I was a big boy.
Oh,
and he was what we called a rabbit.
He was the first year.
Yeah, so we had John Storr. Another thing that always happened, every Christmas my mother used to tell the police station if there are any troops stranded in Kidderminster over Christmas to send them up. And we had some Free French blokes one Christmas. The two I really remember was the two Scottish military policemen that we had. They were down here looking for somebody who'd gone absent without leave. But and it was Christmas, not New Year, we had to. But I know they were quite tearful when they thanked my mother, and they said that they'd never enjoyed a Christmas so much without getting drunk. but it was we were quite a large ramification of the family.
Where did you live?
Larches Road.
You lived in Larches Road.
Yes. Because we were right opposite the Larches Club that used to be Sir Sidney Lee's house. And Sir Sidney Lee's house in the Great War was a hospital for the troops.
Okay.
And our house, three and four, 5 and 6 Larches Road were the coach houses and stables to the house.
Okay, so that's Lee's, that's the carpet manufacturer.
Yeah, well, it's Sydney Lee, anyway. Because you know the little cottage down the bottom of Larches Road is for sale. That was one of the gatehouses to the house. And the other one, by the traffic lights on Sutton Road, there's a roundhouse behind the
fence.
Behind the fence.
Yes, I noticed that on the way up, yes.
Well, that's another of the, used to be another of the gatehouses onto the Larches. So, and the one thing that we could do from the Larches Road, when you looked over the Worcester Road at night when the air raids were on, you could see Birmingham and Coventry being pounded. You saw the flashes of the explosions that they used to go on for hours and hours, and the searchlights.
I've got an aunt who told me she could hear it.
You could.
You could, yes.
Yes, you could watch it and hear the thump.
You could
tell a Junkers aircraft by the noise it made. It's a sort of rhythm to the German aircraft.
My mother used to say that, those are Germans going over, or those are ours. She could tell.
Yes, you could tell by the
thump. She didn't know why, she just knew.
Yeah. And one Sunday afternoon, We did the Kid and Mr. Was bombed.
Yes.
And
around here.
Yes. Well, I think it was with you I was arguing over this.
No, you were telling me.
I can show you some photographs.
There's a bungalow and it's in Greyfield Road.
Greyfield Road, yes.
Yes, that was hit.
Yeah, you were saying about it. Yeah.
Somebody said there was another one somewhere.
But the bomb didn't explode, apparently.
It damaged the house. Yeah.
But there are houses in St. John's Avenue that were damaged.
I can't remember those.
And just up the road here, 154, it's been pulled down now. It was on the corner of Rifle Range. It was part of the Kemp Hospice recently. That was... A bomb fell next door to that.
Well, those two houses.
I can show you those. I can show you the picture of them.
Because those two houses belonged to people who used to live next door to us. But in those days, there wasn't a rifle range road.
No, that's right.
This was a field.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. That's right. I remember this was a field. And I was born in Reservoir Road.
Yes.
And I used to go swimming in the reservoir. Because our garden butted onto the road that went up to the Reza, and the whole of the rifle range was all prefabs after the war, but it was fields before then. And of course the rifle range was actually used, that's what it was.
As a rifle range? Yes. Well, it's been a rifle range for quite a long time.
Oh, it was before
the 1900s.
Yes, but during the war if the red flag was flying you didn't go on.
But in 1880 something it was a horse race.
It was what?
There was a horse racing course there.
That I didn't know. Mm. No.
Yeah. Not for long, I don't think, but it was there. Yeah.
And another bombing was the lot of bombs were dropped in Haverley Valley.
Yes, it was the same incident.
Yes, and in fact it was 1997, I think it was, I unveiled a plaque.
Yes, in fact, there's a photograph of you in Nigel's book, isn't there, doing it?
Is there? I didn't know that. Because the... My mother's family is related to the Osbornes and the Millers that owned the valley in those days.
It was called White Cottage.
There were two cottages, Rose
White
Cottage.
And Rose, wasn't there?
Yes,
they used to do teas and they had the sheds out there. I think it was White Cottage that was. It wasn't damaged very much, or maybe it was just nearby.
They were incendiary bombs, I think, that were dropped, right. They unloaded it. Yeah.
But there was a big oil bomb that dropped in the gates of what used to be one of the Brintons' houses, which became the Croft Nursing Home. There was a big oil bomb dropped in those gates, apparently, as well.
I can't remember.
On the same incident. Yeah.
I can't remember. The only one I can really remember is Greyfield Road.
Well, it was the same incident. There was one big stick of different bombs. Yeah. Haverley Valley, St. John's Avenue, Sutton Park, Greyfield Road. And of course, Harry Cheshire School.
I can't even remember Harry Cheshire School.
No. Well, I don't remember it, but I've only read it.
Got a member.
That is in the shop.
A member of ours actually remembered the one in Sutton Park Road. He actually lived round here.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, ground, ground down.
Yeah. Well, it was a big crater. Because this is what stemmed, actually, the book, really. We had an email from somebody from Australia, and she sent us a photograph of it.
The bombing in Sutton Park Road, in this area here?
As far as it was, a Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And we watched the aircraft floating round. And then the bombs were dropped. But the only one that I do remember is Greatford Road. I don't remember the big one that you're mentioning.
But it was a single, one single aircraft?
Oh, yes, yeah. As I remember, it's a hell of a long time ago, but it was. You could see it.
Yes.
And you thought, well, where the hell are our aircraft? Shoot the damn thing down. But we didn't know, and everybody thought he was lost, and he just dropped it and got out, and he saw a... Because all the factories here, as you know, went over to war munitions. All carpet trades, they went over to bullets and blankets.
That's right, yeah.
I was talking to an aunt of mine only the other day, and she was telling me about, she worked in munitions in Tomkinson's.
Yeah.
It was all Blight and Wilson.
Yeah.
And they were making phosphorus bombs there.
Yeah.
She called them Bosches. I don't know whether it is Bosch for the German Bosch,
Bosch
or whether they whether something else. I have to establish that.
And when I left school, I joined the post office telephones as a youth in training. And we used to have to go out to Park Atwood. Now, Park Atwood was where all the foreign war correspondents' news came to, from all over the world, from every front. They came into the teleprinters up at Park Atwood. So if we had to go up there and fix a teleprinter or whatever it is, we knew what the news the next day was going to be. It all came to Parker, censored and put out to the BBC.
So this would have been about 1944?
No, before then.
Before then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it was the news centre for the BBC from the France one. The other thing that was interesting is if you went to go to Drakelow, the Rover Company, you went down a long tunnel, about 300 yards, and there was an Irish security guard at the bottom, an Irish policeman, or a gatekeeper, whatever we used to call them, and call them security guards.
Yeah.
But as soon as you came in, he knew who you were, if you had been there before. And the bloke I was apprenticed to, I suppose, what it is, was a bloke called Diaper. Little telephone. No, probably his father. Can't think what his Christian name was. He lived at Leswell Lane.
That's right, yes, that's why I know the name. I lived in Leswell Lane.
Fred
Diaper. Yeah, so.
Good find that.
Good morning, Mr. Diaper. You brought the big lad with you. but that was a fantastic place, the underground factory there. Really was.
I can imagine. I've been around the tunnels.
Yes,
they're empty now, of course.
Yes, but that was when they were making them to be a centre of government.
Yes.
That was after the war, that was during the Cold War, if you like.
Yeah, that's
during
really what I've seen, I suppose.
Yeah, they had hospitals and God knows what. And in fact, I believe, you know the Sutton Arms here?
Yeah.
Well, there was, for years after the war, there was an air raid siren outside.
Yeah.
Because the cellars,
yeah,
if anything happened, that was going to be one of the centres of government in the cellars of the Sutton Arms. So the rumour goes. Yeah, so we were told years and years ago because the pub cellars are pretty big.
Okay, and the Home Guard. Sorry.
Yes, oh yes. As soon as they started, it was the LDV, Local Defence Volunteers, first, and my dad joined up with all the old fogies, you know, and he was put in charge of the stores, because we always used to pull his leg about the joke to the quartermaster's stores. But the stores were behind the Futurist. The Futurist was the cinema in Vicar Street,
yeah.
And between the Futurists and I think it was Woolworths, there was an archway that led into a paved area at the back, a sort of courtyard. Then behind the Futurist, where the Stour Flooded came up, were the Home Guard stores, where they... And I got into terrible trouble once because they used to have thunder flashes. And what you do with these thunder flashes, you strike them and throw them away in one movement. Dad was wrong as well, he shouldn't have brought them home. But I got one of these blasted thunder flashes, mm-hmm. and we had a concrete seat right outside the house. And I always remember I got one of these thunder flashes and I put a match to it, instead of scraping, I put a match to it. And the only thing I can remember doing, I was lifted up, and I was looking over the fence into the neighbour's garden, and it was a 6-foot fence. So it lifted me up, I came down. I didn't think I could hear. I went up in the shed and I got a hammer and I was thumping on the bench to see if I could still hear. I went indoors, my grandma, poor old dear, she must have been knocking on 80 then. And I was covered in blood. And I dashed off to Dr. Craig and I had a sugar scar on my chin. He sewed me up, I was dead lucky. I could have done a lot more damage than that, because those thunder flashes, they were big.
They were just little fireworks,
weren't they? Yeah, I think I was getting ready for V night or something. And I remember too, another incident comes back. When the US Army had Burton Coppice, that was a hospital. And I remember that the chapel there.
What was the hospital? At Burton Coppice. I mean, they built one.
Yes.
Because it was a farm, wasn't it? Burton Coppice was a farm.
Yes, they had the big American hospital.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Right across the top, they had two, one at Wolverley and yes. one on top of Burton Coppice.
I didn't know that, okay.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah.
And I also remember going in the chapel and in front of the altar, there's a thundering great barrel of beer, and by the door, there are great boxes of, I'm going to be blunt and say what we called them in those, of French letters. I was about 16 or 17 at the time, and on the post, I was on the telephone, so you went to all these sorts of places. And I was still only a young kid. And I went to the one at Wolverley, and these spiders, and I got lost, and I walked through one blasted barrack room, and it was full of flaming American girls getting dressed. And imagine when 15 or 16, I suppose I was, I'd left school, so I don't know whether I ran, blushed, or just dropped my mouth open. But When I was at school, I'm sorry if I'm rambling.
No.
We played hockey. Yeah. We were the only boys' school
they played that hockey.
Played hockey. But we had to play the RAF teams and things like that. Mm-hmm. We used to play 25 MU, the Hartlebury places. And one of my mates in Larches Road, he lived two doors up, was John Spokes. And his father was the commandant of the civil section of 25 MU. So he wasn't in the RAF, he was a civilian in charge of the civilians
working
across all the whole of the 25 MU, and it was a hell of a spread. And they used to have Queen Mary's taking Spitfires and Spitfire wings, traveling around all the roads, and didn't matter what sort of night or it is, the fog or anything, with dimmed lights. These
Queen Mary's,
yeah.
These were long trucks, presumably.
Yeah, long low loaders.
And I haven't heard of that term.
Huh? haven't you? Oh, yes. They're army vehicles, and, or RAF vehicles, because it was just a supply depot, 25
years ago. Yes. I was only a few months old when the war started, so I don't remember much of this in any detail.
Oh, yes, so they were, in fact.
No, I think it was quite
a
supply unit actually.
Oh God, yes,
I've come past it this evening.
I remember it being built. I can remember Sutton Farm being built. The estate just over here, yes. Tompkins Drive.
I know it was a big place.
Just on where the chapel is now, used to be allotments. One time, and the further down here where the new houses are, there are some steps, very palatial steps up to the reservoir.
Yeah,
great wide steps before any of this lot was built. So,
well, yes, it was used by a lot of people as a swimming pool, isn't it?
Yeah, it sloped down for a bit and then dropped to very deep, high walls. So, with steps down, so if you got into trouble, you had to get to the steps. And there were frogs in there, so to join it. The other thing we had to do as wardens, we had to patrol, and round by the Wren's Nest, by the park, there used to be an air raid shelter there, and we had to go in with our torches and look around. You could always find somebody doing something terribly illegal that hastened my sex education with no end. But it was that sort of thing just happened.
Well, that's right. Yes, there still is. There are a bomb shelter at the top of Barnsley's Hill.
Is there?
Yes. Yeah. On the left-hand side as you go up, it's shut off. But it's. You'll see the concrete tops of the brickworks. It's probably the only one left in Kidderminster.
Well, yes, there used to be all these concrete gun placements all over the place,
yes,
isn't there?
Yes,
on top of Hoobrook Bank. And I know that was where Dad's Home Guard used to have to go on night duty, was on Hoobrook, top of Hoobrook Bank.
Yeah. Oh, you mean up Bagbrook?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
On the Worcester Road,
yes.
What's now Hoo Farm? Hoo Farm Estate.
Oh, Hoo Farm.
Up there. The industrial estate.
Also the top of the hill. So you've gone through Hoobrook and then up the hill.
Up the hill, yes, and on the top of the hill.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
on the hill there, I can remember, we used to walk up there because I had an aunt who lived out at Hartlepool, Taunton.
Yeah.
And on the road, on the side of the road, there were these big concrete blocks that were ready to roll out, weren't there?
Yes. What were these called? Octagonal shaped things, gun posts.
I know what you mean. Yes,
they used to have on Hoobrook that there used to be an airfare from Cobham.
Yes, on the top, didn't they?
Yes.
Yes.
So something Cobham used to bring his air.
Air circus, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I remember my father telling me about that.
Yes, the first time I ever went in De Havilland Dragon.
Oh, it took you on.
Oh, yes, you had.
That was before the war, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Half a crown each, and my brother and myself went up. The only thing I can really remember is the two-wing thing. It didn't matter how loud you shouted, you couldn't even hear your own voice. But you had a tour around Kidderminster and came to land again.
Must have been quite fantastic.
Yeah. So that was, they used to do aerobatics and all that sort of caper. But that was nothing to do.
No.
With the war. It all comes back bit at a time, doesn't it? We're now talking about after the war, and my son joined the Cubs, KD-11, which was Harkaway's scout troop, which was based in the old Tuck H buildings. It was by the locks at the bottom of St Mary's Hill. There was three-storied. There was the Tuck H was on the top, KD11 had the middle floor, and the Toc H had the bottom. It was always known as the Toc H building. It was the derelict place.
And this was on the quay, was it?
Yes.
Next to the...
Yeah. The coal was loaded and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Well, there's a crane there now, isn't there?
Is that still there?
Yes.
Yeah.
They've done it up and...
Yes, but it's all built all over now and all this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the houses have gone, yes.
KD11, we were the first troop. Let's go back a bit. John joined the Cubs. I was asked to join the Parents' Committee. At the first AGM, I was made the chairman of the Parents' Committee. From then on, we raised money for a new headquarters, and we were the first scout troop to build a new headquarters in Kidderminster, and that is the one that is now at Broadwaters. And we raised the money for that, and if we had a Christmas bazaar that grossed £100, we'd cracked it. That was grossed £100. And if you made a fiver at a rummage sale, you were doing very, very well. And the original building cost us, I think it was £2,000. And I think we raised £1,200. And we got the rest from the King George Fund. So, and we were also the first troop to have a Queen Scout. And that was a bloke called Keith Greenwell. He was the first Queen Scout in Kidderminster after the war. Then, I God knows how it happened, I became a commissioner for the Scouts and chairman of the Stretton Memorial Hall, which they just flogged. I wasn't there, the building of it, but I was on their committee for a long time. I was chairman of the finance committee there. And eventually, as an assistant district commissioner of Rovers, we were in charge of Ridcovert.
Oh, yeah.
Which is 36 acres. And that was then owned by Harcourt Webb, Major Harcourt Webb, of Webb's Glass and Webb's Garden Centre.
Yeah, Springgrove.
Springgrove House. And because he paid for everything.
Yes.
We had water and electric. And we had a hut there. And, and in fact, when we were there, we had to dig latrines. Mm. But when he died, the commissioner was a bloke called Jim Brighton. The truest scout I ever knew, Jim Brighton. He was a real gentleman, a real scout. You know, good turn every day and all this sort of thing. He'd seen service in the Far East in the RAF, and he'd come down the Irrawaddy on a pinched steamer. You know, so he wasn't any, he was a real tough bloke. When Harcourt Webb died, he gave the land that we'd had
to
the
Scouts,
his son, Richard Webb, I think it's Richard, who's now the boss of Webb's at Droitwich, is still our life president of the local Scouts Association.
Still keeping interest, yeah. That's good.
Two parachute mines landed near Platt's Wharf, 22nd of April 1941.
Yeah.
You know something about that?
Yes, well, going further back still, when I was at infant school, the manager of the sugar beet was a bloke called Divet, and his son was Dennis Divet, and he was my pal at the infant school at Foley Park. And behind the sugar beet, there are a row of executive houses. I don't know if they're still there, actually.
Are they?
And they had their own tennis courts and all the rest of it. And Dennis Divet and his sister, Annette Devitt, very posh, she called it chocolate and nougat instead of nugget. and I was terribly in love with her at the time. I think she was 12 and I was 6 or something. Anyway, so I knew all that area from ages ago. When these parachute bombs were supposed to have dropped, I was sent, because I knew the all the way round to try and find out where these parachute bombs or whatever it was, they didn't know whether it was parachutists or what. And that was when I was sent to have a look through the chestnut wood round behind.
So what was the evidence for this? Someone had seen something?
That it was reported, and it was reported to our warden's depot, or warden's room, at Larch's Club. And so it was our responsibility to go and look, and there were about four or five of us there, and I was given that job. The others had the easy bit of looking up Northumberland Avenue.
And no one ever found anything?
No. So
they're still there.
If they ever were.
That's right.
Well, they probably were. Cause don't forget, I was 15 or 16 years old then. And that's a long time ago.
Yeah, but if they didn't go off, then they're still alive there. So liable to. Could be in the bottom of the canal.
Snyder was the chief warden for Kidderminster. Now, he was a jeweller in Oxford Street.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember.
I remember jewellers, yes.
Well, he was in charge of all the ARP. And Blenko, as I say, was our little bit. His son, I think, still lives in Larch's Row. And when coming back to the Tulip Centre,
yes.
It was, and I don't know if it was during the war, but shortly after the war, it was the Civil Defence Headquarters. Because when my brother was demobbed, he joined the Civil Defence. He came out of the army and he went in to the Civil Defence. And he got me involved. And at that time, I was the Assistant District Commissioner for Rovers. Now, Rovers were from Scouts from 18 to 26. So we joined as a team the Civil Defence as a reconnaissance unit. And what we were supposed to do is if we were going out and checking on radioactivity, if any atom bombs were ever dropped.
So you've given them guard counters?
Yes. And Land Rovers. The Rover Scouts thought it was bloody marvellous, four-wheel drive.
So this was after the war then?
Yes, shortly after the war.